Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, pledging to help end child hunger in the Carolinas through ongoing support of Second Harvest Food Bank of Metrolina. Details about this initiative at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. You don't need to see the data from the 2020 census to know that Charlotte is tripping over itself due to growth. All you have to do is get into your car. As we recover from the pandemic, traffic is beginning to return to normal. And we all know that traffic has been getting worse for years. Growth means new people continuing to arrive and new people bringing with them their cars. We have been struggling for years to keep up with all these vehicles. You cannot build roads fast enough, so other transportation options must be put on the table. We have a new transit plan, but if it is ever fully realized, that will come years into the future. We have the new streetcar, but it only travels between two points, and its expansion is also years away. So let's look at those plans and other solutions to avoiding permanent gridlock. We're joined by Eli Portillo, Assistant Director of Outreach and Strategic Partnerships at the UNC Charlotte Urban Institute, or should I just say the Charlotte Urban Institute. He's been following growth and its impact for years. What should I say, Eli, now that you've changed the name of the university?
Well, you should probably say, I work at Charlotte in Charlotte.
Okay. Clear as mud. Tony Macia is editor of the Charlotte Ledger, which in addition
not
to
the UNC Charlotte Ledger, it's the Charlotte Ledger.
Which in addition to its business newsletter publishes Transit Time each Thursday. It covers transit and transportation options from cars to scooters and more. Tony, welcome back.
Good morning.
Good morning. And because all of this has a political component to it, WFAE's political reporter Steve Harrison is also with us. Good morning to you.
Hey, good morning, Mike.
Tony, since you covered this in your weekly newsletter, which covers all the transportation options we have at our, options that we have at our disposal, can you briefly list our options today, followed by those that are planned for the future?
Well, that's a big question, and I do want to point out that, you know, it's a newsletter that we put out in partnership with the UNC Charlotte Urban Institute that Eli represents, as well as WFAE. You know, Steve's a big contributor. So, yeah, I mean, all kinds of different things are on the table. Obviously, there's been a lot of talk about the, you know, the light rail plan, what's going to happen with that. You know, they're pumping up the, you know, the bike lanes, focus on connectivity, walkable neighborhoods, you know, buses, you know, they would like to see more going on with that. You know, we have this new streetcar, you know, $150 million project, you know, going through from Elizabeth to the historic West End. You know, we have scooters. There are all kinds of options now, you know, that really sort of, you know, if you were to think back, you know, 15 years ago in Charlotte, that we didn't really have, you know, you have a whole bunch of new things coming online, a bunch of different options for getting around. Now, that said, if you look at what people actually use, it's still very heavily cars. And so people, when you talk about transportation in Charlotte, you know, obviously the thing that pops into mind is cars and traffic. But, you know, we are starting to see a few of these sort of newer technologies come online and offer people some choices.
Well, Eli, I was going to say that this city, like most American cities, was developed to be a car city, and we will be a car city for the foreseeable future, probably our lifetimes, our children's lifetimes, maybe even our grandchildren's lifetimes, despite all of these other options that they're trying to put on the table. Will streetcars, light rail, expansion of light rail, bicycle lanes, greenways really do anything in the foreseeable future to reduce congestion?
Well, I think you highlighted a few important things. And first, you know, Charlotte as a kind of post-World War II boomtown really is built for the auto age. We're very spread out. We have actually slightly larger land area than the city of New York, but somewhere around a tenth the population density. So, I mean, that's just really big. If you think about all five boroughs of New York City, that's the equivalent area of Charlotte. So It's going to take a really long time to build a comprehensive network that can start taking cars off the road and getting more people to and from, you know, their place of work, where they drop their kids off, all those things. I think that another important component is in Mecklenburg County, about 50% of our workers commute in from outside the county, at least pre-COVID. So we're really talking about beyond just Charlotte. We're talking about the whole region. There's an initiative called Connect Beyond right now that's being led by the Centralina Regional Council and the Charlotte area transit system. That's got the first regional transit plan in the works. But even if that's built out, it's going to take a long time. And as you said, we're doing this in a high growth environment. In some ways, it would be a lot easier to wrap our heads around if Charlotte was standing still. But we're going to add hundreds of thousands of people to this region over the next decade. And we've got a plan not just for what's here today, but what's coming. And that makes it really complicated.
Did you want to add to that, Steve?
Yeah, I was just going to say, you know, that the kind of City of Charlotte plan, like Tony said, is very focused on the idea of choice, transit, bikes, greenways, pedestrian. And then you've got kind of the state level, the NCDOT plan, which has been a big shift. And that shift is that we are not going to see a major highway project in this area that does not involve the managed toll express lanes. You know, we had them on I-77, of course, the huge controversy that opened 2 years ago. But sometime this decade, the state is going to totally rebuild I-77 through South Charlotte. That will be a multi-billion dollar project with toll lanes. They're doing toll lanes on I-45, Independence Boulevard. So the days, I think, of a kind of standard highway widening project of, you know, just lanes for everyone, that's over. We are going to see, you were going to pay for the convenience of getting around.
Talk to me about that, because everything that we're talking about, planning for the future, costs money, and a lot of money. And back in the early 20th century, we saw cities building subway systems and other light rail forms of transportation. We saw in the 50s and 60s the building of the interstate highway system, all of which was free to the user except it's through gasoline tax fees. And today, as you pointed out, we don't do that anymore. We don't build anything anymore. There doesn't seem to be a political will for any kind of infrastructure. That bill is stuck in Congress right now. And what we do build, we support not through tax dollars necessarily, but through usage fees, tolls. What happened? Why has that changed? And is there any political will to do what needs to be done in Charlotte and cities like Charlotte that are growing so rapidly, Steve?
So I think a couple of things. One, I mean, that, you know, the gas tax, it's really hard to raise the gas tax politically. Then you have this other piece of people, a lot of time, you know, the gas tax is not generating that amount of money that it used to, because our cars are much more fuel efficient. So highway budgets are kind of hit on that end. But then there's another piece that the idea that the managed toll lanes and the express lanes, you pay a fee, it's not just a budgetary thing. That this is something that a lot of planners and people in cities want, because they feel like that for decades, the idea, the costs of driving have been too subsidized. It's been too easy. It leads to too much sprawl. And that, you know, if you want to live 30 miles outside of the center city, then there is a cost to that. And if you want to get around quickly, then maybe that's, you know, cost you $4 or $5. So I think there's a lot of, just locally, a lot of different pieces going on. There is a real political vision that if you want to drive 50 miles an hour on the interstate, you should pay for that.
And I think if I could just add to that, in the Connect Beyond regional transit plan, which has not gotten as much attention as the Charlotte-centric plan, that is called demand management strategies. And that's one of the things that they're talking about. And, you know, you can either build more roads and try to increase the supply and build more rail lines and increase the supply out there, or you can try to manage demand through things like tolls, making it, you know, less attractive to drive. So we've really, I think, approached transportation from the supply side, trying to always increase the supply. I think as we run out of space, as there's more pressure to reduce emissions, as money gets harder to find, we're going to see a lot more push to manage demand and try to, you know, come up with strategies to approach this problem from that side over the coming decades.
We talk about having a transportation system. What we have now is a bus system, kind of. It's not necessarily great, and the bus system knows that, and they've been working on making it better for years. But there's also this stigma attached to riding the bus by some folks. They're just not going to do it, which is why we have a streetcar, I suppose, because that's sexier than riding the bus. For a while, they were successful in increasing ridership on the bus, and the pandemic took everything down because there was no traffic going anywhere. We are at the point right now, I understand, Eli, we're at 2002 levels of ridership. Is that because of the pandemic, or are there other factors involved?
So, you know, the pandemic really pushed everything off a cliff. If you just look at those numbers, we're way down. You know, I think the bus system's down still almost half its riders from the last, pre-pandemic period. Blue Line is down even more, and it's been falling for a long time. Blue Line ridership has been, you know, kind of holding steady, increasing since the extension was opened, but the bus system numbers have been coming down even before the pandemic. There's a few reasons that could be. Gas has been cheap in a strong economy. People were probably able to purchase cars. There are things like ride hailing, Uber, Lyft, etc., that have supplanted some public transit. But you talk to experts in this field, and they'll talk about this stigma, you know, this association that many people have that buses are for lower income people without alternatives. And in Charlotte, you know, buses take a long time. Yeah. The average trip was about 90 minutes. And if you're doing that two times a day, 3 hours a day versus 20 or 30 minutes in a car, that's a huge tax on riders' time. So if you have an alternative, people, you know, will choose that.
We'll talk some more about buses, but also the impact of future technologies on whatever is in our planning stream for transit options in Charlotte when we come back at Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, dedicated to those who believe a car should stir one's emotions and deliver a heightened state of driving. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about transportation today and tomorrow in Charlotte and the surrounding area with Eli Portillo, who is with the UNC Charlotte Urban Institute. Tony Macias, editor of Charlotte Ledger. Steve Harrison is our political reporter here at WFAE News. As you pointed out, Eli, in a piece that you wrote for Transit Time at the Charlotte Ledger, even as we prepare to invest billions of dollars into building new light rail, buses still carry most local transit riders, and buses are cheaper to roll out and operate than trains. And in fact, you say buses are eyed as the key to a regional transit system. But do they have now, or could they in the future have, any significant impact on traffic and congestion, since they are part of the traffic on the street?
Well, this is one thing that CATS has been wrestling with. You know, they piloted a bus-only lane on Central Avenue to try to get around that. That lasted for 6 months, late last year into early this year. And they're exploring places they could maybe do more of that. It ran into a lot of opposition from neighbors along Central Avenue. And, you know, as you might expect, drivers were saying, wait, they're taking away a lane of traffic. What? They're also trying with the express bus lanes on I-77 going north, kind of a bus rapid transit, since the red line is not going to happen anytime soon. So yeah, it is a contradiction, because you can't really get the time benefits of transit unless you get the bus somehow out of those lanes. And that's a big issue they have going forward.
And Tony, Central Avenue is a good place to talk about one of the other problems that we face, and that is densification of Charlotte. Certainly South End's a good example of that, but at least they have the light rail. But the project that they just announced at the corner of Pecan and Central, which will go up in the next couple of years, looks like it's going to bring major densification and mid-rise buildings to an area that really is one or two stories right now, and mostly parking lots. And they're not going to widen Central Avenue. So can we ever get ahead of this problem?
Yeah, that's a good question. You know, you're seeing that a lot of places, and there was a lot of concern, head scratching, I think, this week, social media, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, of people saying, you know, this is, why are they putting this in here? This looks like South End. We're building apartments and towers all over the place. Neighborhoods are losing their charm. And then, yes, the other piece of that is the traffic component. I mean, I would say that particular development at Pecan and Central Avenue, 12-acre project. They're talking about in the first phase, 150,000 square feet of office, retail shops, almost 400 apartments. It is actually on the future Silver Line, and it's also on the future Gold Line streetcar line. So there are some things there. The other point, though, I think, and you're seeing this a lot in the center city and surrounding neighborhoods, is that you are actually seeing some of that is actually office and residential. And so as cities grow, and they grow outward from the center, the vision is to have more places where you actually aren't reliant on cars. You're seeing some of this in South End. It's a little bit new for Charlotte, which over the years hasn't always had a whole bunch of people living uptown, at least in the last few decades, where people traditionally commuted in. You're seeing this dynamic now in South End, where you're having these big office towers, you got Lowe's there, and you also have a lot of apartments. And if you talk to younger people who live in South End, a lot of them work in South End. And so they are not as reliant on cars as they used to be. I know somebody who works at LendingTree, a woman, he said her millennial coworkers give her a hard time because she drives into work. And they all, take a scooter or walk. So you're starting to see that dynamic. And this is, if we can link it to the 2040 plan, one of the visions there was, can we create places that we don't have to drive cars to, and we don't have to get in the car for 30 minutes and live out in Union County and drive somewhere? So there is this component of trying to make these development patterns a little more not so car centric.
But we also have the enormous cost of building rail lines if we want to go in that direction, I suppose. And the argument has always been, rail lines are permanent and development grows up around them and you can't move them. If development changes or if trends change, you can move the bus. Is there still an active thrust, if that's the right word, for making buses, Tony, the linchpin of our transportation system still?
Well, I think, certainly transit planners would like to see more people on the bus. The question is, and Eli's written about this, Steve's written about this, how do you actually make that happen? And it's sort of walking this tightrope. I mean, on the one hand, the buses, they need to be more convenient. They need to be more frequent, more reliable. They also need to go where people actually work. And it gets very hard, I think, as the city grows. We're not just in a development pattern where all the jobs are uptown and all the people live outside of uptown. You have employment centers all over the place, South Park, University, Ballantyne. So how do you construct a network that gets everybody where they want to go? It's not just, everybody goes to uptown in the morning and everybody leaves uptown in the evening. It's a much more dynamic and much tougher thing to kind of plan.
And I know, Steve, you want to chime in on that, but let me add something to that. This is a recent development. People used to commute into downtown in the morning and commute out. Now there are all these other ring cities, essentially, like Ballantyne and South Park and other areas that are key employment opportunities for people who may or may not live in those areas. So now you have people coming and going in all directions at all times. That's recent. We don't know what the future holds. So how do you plan for that?
I was going to say a couple things. I mean, one, this bus difficulty or decline in ridership that we've been talking about, it's happening in Charlotte, but not just here. This is across the country that transit systems are really struggling to understand where riders have gone. And it has been big drops, 20, 30, 40%. And one, some cities, Houston redesigned its bus network to a grid, to get away from this, like every bus going downtown, to try and hit these other employment centers. Cats would love to do that. That's their big vision. They've kind of tried that a little bit in the past to have more crosstown routes. They found they were really expensive and didn't have that many people, but that's kind of the new vision, but they can't without the transit tax, without the transit plan, no money, no way to do any of that.
Ridership is decreasing. Part of that's because of the pandemic, but things that have come out of the pandemic are that businesses are rethinking about whether or not they need these enormous footprints in a central location because people can now work from home. And we just had the announcement this week that Duke Energy is selling two of its buildings uptown because they're decreasing their footprint. Does that doom, in a way, any future plans we have for any kind of mass transit, Steve, whether it's light rail or whether it's buses for that matter?
Yeah, I think it's a big issue. I talked a couple of months ago to Ron Tober, we've all been around a long time, so we all know Ron. He was the first director of CATS. You will not meet a more pro-transit person in this city than Ron Tober. But, you know, he even said like that he was really worried about what the future looks like because of those things you just mentioned, Mike, about work from home. And he said, you know what, we may need to kind of tap the brakes for a year or two and see what the shakeout, what things look like, because if people work from home 1 or 2 days a week, a huge impact, impact on traffic, transit, everything.
Light rail. There were a lot of naysayers before the blue line came in. It was called a boondoggle, and they were all proven to be incorrect, at least when it comes to increasing the tax base of South End and other areas that the blue line runs through and the densification of those areas. But people still argue that this is 18th or 19th century technology, and we don't even know what the future holds for future technology. And if we keep building these lines, by the time they're up and running, they may be outdated by these future technologies that we can't even imagine. But one of the things we haven't talked about that results in these rail lines is that things are built. They do increase development and the tax base. But doesn't that also increase congestion, Eli?
Well, I think that there's a couple aspects of this. One is, as Tony was saying, if you're building dense stuff that's accessible by transit in neighborhoods where people don't have to walk everywhere, you can have more density without necessarily increasing congestion. I think we do see, I don't want to say hypocrisy, but a lot of times when you have, 400 houses built on the edges of the city limits, you don't have a ton of opposition. And, you have 400 households in a new subdivision where everyone has to drive to everything. When you multiply that by the amount of sprawling growth that Charlotte has seen, you're going to see a lot more congestion from those, diffuse subdivisions built around the edges of Charlotte. And, I'm also not knocking those. I live kind of in that neck of the woods in a sprawling subdivision where I have to drive to pretty much everything. So, hypocrisy, I guess that's me. But I think that those generate a lot of traffic in a more diffuse way. You do see a lot of opposition to in-town density, but I think that actually has the potential to generate less. The other thing is we ask a lot of transit. We talk about economic development. We talk about helping low-income people. We talk about serving riders without cars. We talk about luring riders who have cars. We talk about, will transit pay for itself? Is it losing money? Is it spurring new districts? And we don't really ask those things of roads traditionally. We kind of just build roads and we ask, is it open? Is it on budget? And I think that when it comes to transit, we really expect it to do everything from move people to change communities. And I don't see that kind of scrutiny applied to other modes of getting around.
Tony, we are developing all these transit plans because we have to, otherwise we'll choke ourselves to death on traffic and congestion as these people move here from elsewhere, and they continue to do so even when in the pandemic. And we haven't talked a lot about these future technologies that we don't really know what may or may not happen, but people have mentioned these driverless cars that will be able to read traffic signals and pedestrian traffic and stop when they need to, but go when they don't need to stop for a traffic light. And that's just one technology that may or may not come about, but we have to plan for something that we know about. That's why we're planning for light rail and bus lines and things like that. And as far as I know, there's nothing in any of these transit plans that makes room for these technologies of the future that may or may not arrive. Should they be in those plans, or is the responsible road forward to just plan for the technologies that we have?
I mean, it's a very hard question, because if you look at the time frame of the transit plan, I mean, it's not going to be all built out until 2040, 2041. And that's if it stays on track. At the same time, you have all these other things kind of coming out. And so how do you incorporate a technology that hasn't even been invented yet into a plan that lasts for 20 years? And so, I mean, that is one of the criticisms, is that these are, we're using old technology and, it's not going to be built for 20 years. There are going to be all these other things, TARC, BACARI, the council members talked about, what if we have these floating Amazon warehouses and can we tunnel under intersections and get in our Teslas? And, you know, I mean, some of this stuff sounds kind of far out, but the larger point I think is a good point, in that how much are we going to wed ourselves to today's technology as it relates to Uber and Lyft? I mean, transit planners a lot of times see those as complementary, you know, it's solving what they call, you know, the last mile problem about, you know, the light rail might not have a stop right by your house, Mike, but maybe you would take the light rail if you could get it in an Uber and take it to the light rail stop, for instance. So, I mean, I think it is a fair question. How do you plan for these technologies, you know, that don't yet exist? And I think, you know, certainly you'd want to see some flexibility there, but it's a hard thing when you're planning 20 years ahead of time.
What we have now and what we seem to be planning for in the future is a hodgepodge of transportation alternatives: cars, buses, light rail, the streetcar, bike lanes, greenways, etc. Steve, do we have a system, or is that what we're working toward, to have some sort of a system that works all together like it's planned?
Well, that's the goal. That's the goal, is to have this system that gives people choices, that, you know, kind of we talked about, that if you live you live close to your job, you can walk or ride your bike. And, you know, I think those are, it's kind of hard to say in terms of like the effectiveness of that. I think a lot of things like the greenways and the bike lanes and the streetcar, I think, are really important to having a livable city. They're kind of, I think you could call them amenities, of like these great choices we have that I'm not stuck in my car. And I think that's very attractive to people moving here. Will it solve, or maybe not even solve, congestion? Will it reduce congestion? I don't know. But I think it's, the idea at least is to give people choice. And that's what they're moving toward.
And I have about 20 seconds left, Eli, but we have all these plans on the table, some being considered, some being, I guess people have said okay to them. What are the chances that any of them will be fully realized in the time frame allotted?
Well, the time frame is pretty long, but we all know infrastructure can get pushed back, schedules slip, costs increase. So, you know, if I could predict that, I'd probably be in a different line of work, like predicting the lottery numbers.
Can you? Eli Portillo is with us. He's with UNC Charlotte's Urban Institute. Tony Macia from the Charlotte Ledger, and WFAE News political reporter Steve Harrison is here. We'll continue in a moment. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, committed to Mazda's focus to ensure every element of a car is designed around the driver. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about transportation today and tomorrow in Charlotte to deal with growth and development, etc. Eli Portillo is with us from the UNC Charlotte Urban Institute, Tony Macia from the Charlotte Ledger, and Steve Harrison from WFAE News. Earlier this year, city leaders released plans on how they propose to build out the region's first transit system. It's called Connect Beyond. It includes Lynx, Light Rail, Blue Line, Red Line, Silver Line. We're going to run out of colors. The City Link's Gold Line or streetcar, and a proposed expansion of that line in the future. It includes what is known as the North Rail Corridor, as well as being referred to as high capacity transit from Charlotte to Fort Mill and Rock Hill, beyond Monroe into Gastonia and Cabarrus and Iredell counties. They plan to release more details about this month, in fact. Is this in addition, Eli, to the Charlotte Moves plan, or is this part of it?
So this Connect Beyond is in addition to, and the way John Lewis, the CATS chief executive, put it this week at Charlotte City Council, was that these plans naturally work together, build off each other. I think that, you know, the Connect Beyond plan has gotten a lot less attention, partially because it's more high level vision plan, doesn't have cost numbers attached to it. But, you know, if you're talking about solving congestion, you can't do that without the region, when we've got hundreds of thousands of people commuting across county lines.
And do we have buy-in from the region? Are people outside of the city of Charlotte as gung-ho about the need for this as we are?
So I think that's going to be a really interesting and kind of probably community by community issue. You know, the city's plans for the Silver Line do have, you know, kind of the first toeholds into Gaston County and Union County for a rail line that would, you know, cross those and Mecklenburg. Mm-hmm. There's been enthusiasm from those leaders. But again, we haven't seen that put to, you know, is there enough enthusiasm for people in other counties to vote for, say, a sales tax increase to pay for that? Is there enough enthusiasm in the General Assembly to explore creating some kind of, you know, cross-county governing entity? So I think there's a lot of enthusiasm so far at the conceptual level. You know, when you talk to leaders around the region in other counties, everyone's kind of like, yeah, more ways to get around. That's great. More transit. That's great. But when you put numbers to it and tax money to it, I think we'll see a real test.
And Steve, we talked about this a little last month on the News Roundup when it was first announced. The Charlotte Business Alliance estimated that the economic impact of the $13.5 billion transportation plans, they estimated it in terms of what we would lose without it. They said we stand to lose $28 billion in economic output by 2050 if congestion is not addressed. They didn't add a lot of detail to that, those comments, but did they say, did they ever say what we would gain, I guess, is the question.
Yeah, they kind of couched it as, right, if we don't do this, we lose all this economic impact and these jobs. So if we do it, we will get them back. You know, I think it was like 126,000 jobs over by 2050 was the idea. But Mike, you said it, that it was very vague. There wasn't a lot of details. I don't know how much they're going to be able to kind of rely on that report when building the case. I mean, they're going to take that report to Phil Berger in Raleigh. I don't think that the Republican leadership is going to be particularly impressed by that study. Now, that's not to say they won't ultimately give Charlotte the ability to raise their sales tax. The city and the Republican leadership are playing really nice these days. There's kind of a truce, but I, you know, that report, I'm not sure that's really going to change people's minds, convince people.
Yeah. And the report, Tony, also never showed that the transportation plan will take cars off the road. Is there any way to estimate how congestion would be impacted if we were to build out this entire system as planned, considering that we're also going to continue to grow as they build that system and after they finish it?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, that's always sort of the implication is that, oh, this is going to help congestion if you give people choices and give people a light rail line that they want to ride. I mean, I would just say, you know, and you asked about it earlier, Mike. I mean, if you look at actually what happened in South End, you know, you look back to that debate, you know, what was it, 15, 20 years ago? I mean, I think they never really explicitly said, oh, this will reduce congestion. I mean, it was more, we need to give people choices. Our area is growing. And certainly if you fast forward to today, I mean, we can look back and we have an experience and we can see what happened. I mean, South End boomed. Some of it was probably coming anyway, but I think most people in town agree that it was good for the development and that it did bring jobs into South End. There's a lot going on now in South End. But the congestion question is a tougher question. I mean, where, you know, if you ask people in South End, oh, well, where's the traffic bad? They'll say, oh, South Boulevard, oh, the traffic's horrible. You know, there's a lane closed for this. And it's like, you know, it certainly didn't solve the issue of congestion. I mean, but everybody who's on a train isn't in a car. So in that sense, maybe it helped.
And they'll say, you see, it didn't solve congestion. In fact, it's worse now because you have all these apartment buildings and people living in them and they all have cars for the most part. And unless you want to go where the blue line goes, you got to get in your car to go or take the bus. And not many people do that when you in the scheme of things. But the congestion would have come anyway because people would have arrived here anyway, Eli. But is the bottom line that we have to have a plan? We have to have these options. Otherwise, at some point, we will kill the goose that's laying the golden egg by choking ourselves to death.
Well, I think the bugaboo that kind of hangs over all this discussion is Atlanta. You know, that's always, since I moved here, been what people point to and say, we don't want to be Atlanta, Atlanta traffic. We don't want that. Atlanta, Atlanta, Atlanta. So I think that there is that worry, you know, that eventually we could be too traffic choked to sustain growth. And, you know, you can look at the flip side of that and say, well, where's there really bad congestion? California cities like San Francisco and LA, New York City, Atlanta, the Dallas area, Washington, DC, you know, where I'm from, a suburb of. And those are all really fast growing areas, yeah. you know, that have sustained that. But I think that it's a paradox, because if you look at the alternatives of doing nothing, congestion is going to increase. If you do something, congestion still might increase, but people might have more choices.
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't think it's necessarily all or nothing. If you talk to local leaders, they'll say something like, it's a menu, it's a buffet, it's all of the above. We've got to do some of everything.
And Anthony emails, increasing density in satellite cities represent wonderful ideas, but the working class will still have trouble getting to jobs without some type of transportation infrastructure. The example of working for Lending Tree and living downtown is great if your salary supports it. What about the support staff? How do they get to work? What about people who clean the buildings? How do they get to work? And that's why this transportation system is important. The people we've been told many times by civic leaders. Tony, Charlotte has narrow streets uptown. There's no way to widen those streets. Like, you can't create boulevards like they have in D.C. because the city was laid out that way, and now we have skyscrapers on both sides of the street. The streets outside of the center city seem to have been designed in the 40s and 50s to accommodate the traffic flow at the time, but it doesn't do well today because we have too many cars. And then along South End, where they have been planning for development, it seems to me they could have widened South Boulevard as they went along it with new development, but they did not. South Carolina does that. We don't. Why not? And the answer is?
Well, let's look at South Carolina. Have you been on 95 in South Carolina? It's always backed up because 95 is just two lanes, you know, after you get off of 26, you know, heading down to the beach. So I don't want to take any, you know, we should look for ideas everywhere. But the idea that South Carolina, we need to look at them to solve Charlotte's transportation woes.
Well, that's an interstate. That's not fair.
I know. It's different.
Let's look at.
Talk to the transportation planners here in Charlotte, Mike. I mean, they'll tell you. I mean, it is hard to widen these streets. They also don't really want to widen these streets. If you widen South Boulevard, if you widen Providence Road, say, you know, you're making those less appealing for bikers, for walkers. You know that yes, you could get some short-term benefit potentially, but that ultimately you're going to attract more development, and you're going to make it sort of less friendly for these other modes of transportation yeah. that they're trying to encourage. So it's a matter of how do you, you know, what exactly can you do? And they're sort of playing small ball. They're doing things at intersections, adding turn lanes. You know, they are widening a few streets, but it's not really on the scale that's really going to make a huge difference.
Well, let me be the politically incorrect bad guy here for a second, Steve. Are there a significant number of people willing to leave their cars behind and ride bicycles to avoid widening roads that make it less popular to ride a bike on, or to stop narrowing downtown streets even more to accommodate bike lanes for the five people that ride bicycles? That's politically incorrect.
I'm going to say, I mean, I can be a bit of a skeptic on how, you know, how successful transit will be. You know, bike lanes to me, I mean, I think it's one of these things where, again, you will never see the difference in the aggregate on how many people commute by bike. But having said that, you know, it is this lifestyle choice, giving people choices. It is a kind of what kind of city do we want to live in? What does this look like? And I think we're going to continue to move in that direction. And I think it's something that probably, you know, there are some people who get a huge amount of enjoyment about being able to ride their bike mm-hmm. in a safe space. And I think there's a lot of merit to that. Is that really going to solve anything? No, but I do think it creates the kind of city that a lot of people want to live in.
Another alternative. Go ahead, Eli. Do you want to say something?
I was just going to say, I wrote about this, and I live in South Charlotte. I'm not going to ride my bike to commute to UNC Charlotte. That would take me a really long time, and I don't have that much time with kids and all that. But I would ride my bike to the Harris Teeter, to Common Market, to a lot of these places that I currently drive, because it's really scary to ride my bike, especially with my kids. So you know, I think if you're talking about just commutes, maybe you won't see that difference. If you're talking about the 2 to 4 mile trip to grab a cup of coffee, do a fill-in grocery store, take my kids to lunch, that I think you would see a difference there from something like bike infrastructure.
The idea is to provide alternative transportation options. And one of the new transportation alternatives now is the streetcar that goes from Elizabeth to Johnson C. Smith University. It just opened. It's free to ride for the time being. Do we have any indication of why, of what ridership is right now, or if it eventually compares to what used to be on those trams, those gasoline-powered vehicles that ran that along that same route? Will it reduce traffic, or will it become part of the congestion problem because it's on the roadway with the cars?
Steve. So, Katz, I asked for their ridership numbers on that. You know, back in the day, they would put out the first day ridership of the Lynx Blue Line immediately. They've said we have to wait a couple weeks for the Go Line. I think the big problem with the streetcar, you know, in terms of a congestion thing, I don't think it's a particularly serious project. I mean, the trains run every 20 minutes. Mm-hmm. It's about a 35-minute trip from end to end. And if you miss your train and have to wait 20 minutes, that doesn't work. That right. is not a solution.
We have to stop, but Tony, I'm going to let you have the last word. Are leaders at the state level or the local level, for that matter, committed to taking some sort of action soon? And are citizens on board?
Soon, I'm not sure of. I think they are committed to taking some action. I don't know when that happens. It certainly doesn't seem like there's a lot of movement forward, you know, with the legislature to get the permissions that they need. So it'll play out. I mean, I think it'll happen in some form, but I don't think it's going to be soon.
Tony Mesilla is the editor of the Charlotte Ledger. Steve Harrison is our political reporter here at WFAE News. And Eli Portillo is assistant director of outreach and strategic partnerships at UNC Charlotte's Urban Institute. Thank you all for the hour. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, pledging to help end child hunger in the Carolinas through ongoing support of Second Harvest Food Bank of Metrolina. Details about this initiative at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com.